Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Look at what they value and look at their budget and what they're proposing. Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
And we're back. It's 8 o'clock on the East Coast. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on August 22nd, 2012, right here on blogtalkradio.com. Not a lot of news today, but definitely a lot of conversation. The Aiken thing just won't go away, and it's probably not going to go away. Todd Aiken, representative from Missouri, running for Senate, that story's not going to go away. People are still talking about his rape comments. But what I'm noticing in that conversation that's happening, folks, is that people are afraid to really have a conversation about rape. There is no real conversation about rape, and people are afraid of it, and rightly so. I don't begrudge anybody who can't have an honest conversation about it. They're worried about it. They're concerned about it. You know, there's this argument brewing about the difference between rape and statutory rape. And, you know, it's a really, really tough issue. I don't know whether or not you guys remember this, but in 2008, there were these stories that came up. And, you know, again, I took a hard stance, as I've done as a news guy, you know, with Star and Buck Wild and just a news person in general. I've always been very, very cautious about the conversation of rape until, of course, what happened to me. And I will tell you right off the bat, I will make a strong argument against false rape claims. People who have been legitimately raped, legitimately raped, people who have been raped. See, there's your conversation. There's your problem, because there are people out there who were not legitimately raped, people who are lying, people who are not telling the truth. There are people out there who do that. Tawana Brawley, Heidi Jones, Bjornie Gonzalez, just to name a few. Look them up. I mean, look at Bjornie Gonzalez. Bjornie Gonzalez in Manhattan meets a guy by the name of William McCaffrey. One night she's out, she's getting drunk. She meets this guy, William McCaffrey. He's in an SUV with a bunch of his friends. He sees this pretty girl. Hey, we're going to this after-hour spot. You want to go? They get in the car. She gets in the car. Drives with them to the after-hour spot. The after-hour spot is closed. Oh, it's closed, too bad. They drive her back to her spot. William McCaffrey doesn't know that Bjornie Gonzalez has actually left her friends who had no ride back at the original club without a ride. Bjornie Gonzalez gets stopped off. Now, William McCaffrey, was he a cad? Sure he was. He's trying to hook up with some girl he just met on the street. Tried to kiss her, make out with her inside of the SUV, and she was kind of rejecting because, you know, she had just met him, and fine. But he let her off. Hey, go on about your way. She left. She gets back. She walks back over to the original club. She left. She sees her girlfriend there. She catches up with her girlfriends. Her girlfriends are furious. Where the F you been? You left us here. We ain't have no ride. What's going on? Her friends, who have probably been drinking as well, were irate. They commenced to whip in Bjornie Gonzalez's ass. You know, these are Latin women. They went off. They're drunk. They're left at a club. They have no ride to get home. They probably feel as though their lives are in jeopardy. They commenced to whip in Bjornie Gonzalez's ass. Right there on the spot. Little altercation comes up. security guard is across the street or in the area that they're in, I guess in the parking garage, walks over. Bjornie's scared to death because her friend's going to whip her ass because she left them. She's got no excuse. I just got raped. Her friends finally stop beating on her. They call the cops. Lo and behold, she's got the perpetrator's name and number in her hand. Because William McCaffrey, when he took her out to the game, hey, here's my number. Give me a call. Because that's what rapists do. Yeah, you know, let me rape you, bitch. Here's my number. Call me when you get a chance so we can hook up again. You call me. She accuses the guy. He gets arrested. He's got a shady background. He's had some felonies. Nothing like this before. But they go to trial. They go to trial. This broad gets on the stand and tells the story how it happened, according to her. William McCaffrey, bam, 20 years. This son of a gun sits in jail for 4 years. 4 years. What I failed to mention, what I should have mentioned is that one of the things used against William McCaffrey in this case is a bite mark on his arm. On her arm, I apologize. A bite mark on Bjornie Gonzalez's arm. Which, by the way, was never DNA tested. So, they go, finally, after he's in jail, he gets the Innocence Project to help him out. They check out the bite mark and check the DNA. No Y chromosome. No Y chromosome. She got bit by a girl. But Bjornie Gonzalez says nothing for 4 years, keeps it to herself. Until she meets an older gentleman who's pretty pious. He's somewhat religious. He follows the Catholic Church. He straightens this broad out. Gets her to get her ish together. And she starts going to Catholic Church regularly. She starts going to confession regularly. She walks into a priest. Walks in, talks to a priest to give confession. She says, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned." When was the last time that you've ever confessed, you skeevy little broad? It's been a while, probably never. Father, what would you like to confess, you piece of garbage? She says, "Father, I lied and put a man in jail for 20 years for a rape he didn't commit." "I'm sorry, bitch. Could you repeat that?" "Yes, Father. I put a man in jail for rape that he didn't commit. I lied because I got in trouble." "Hold up, bitch. Am I supposed to give you, like, what, 20 Hail Marys and 50 Our Fathers and we're supposed to be done with that? You've got to correct this." So the father, the priest, eggs her on. He's got to egg this broad on to call the district attorney's office in Manhattan, where William McCaffrey was sentenced. Got to egg this woman on. You got to go down there and talk to these people. You have to tell them what really happened. You have to get this man out of jail. If you want to make things right with God, you've got to make things right with this man. She's reluctant. In one case, she even told the father. Get this one, folks. In one case, she even told the father that she lost the district attorney's number. Not that it isn't, you couldn't find this out through the yellow pages or online. She actually told the father she lost the number. Therefore, she literally, lackadaisical, dragging her ass to do this. But listen to me, you don't need to take my, look up her name. Bjornie Gonzalez is spelled B-U-I-R-N-E-Y or N-Y, Bjornie Gonzalez. His name is William McCaffrey. Just look at their pictures up. Now, William McCaffrey looks like he could be a little Irish, but also looks like he could be a little Latino. Very, very pale-looking gentleman. He looks a little Latino to me, but I'm almost certain he's Irish. But nonetheless, I go back. Anyway, it comes to the point where the priest has got to take her hand and walk on down. Walk on down to the district attorney's office from New Jersey, where she lives now, by the way. Take her down there. Hold her goddamn hand. The reason why she's reluctant is because she knows she's going to get in trouble, and she's also pregnant at the time. In fact, when she learns that she's pregnant, she decides, F it, I'm not going to tell anybody. But she finally gets down there. It's 4 years later. The Innocence Project is already on this case. They've got the DNA from the bite. They are about to blow this thing out of the water, ask for a new trial and everything, and then they hear about this. But the district attorney doesn't even want to deal with it. The district attorney, when they find out about the bite mark, and they find out that there's no Y chromosome in the bite mark, the district attorney says, I issue not, ladies and gentlemen, says, and I quote, that DNA could have come from her girlfriend's tear while she was crying on her after the rape. Swear to you, it's in the story. So after all of this, it's finally revealed she lied. Someone's got to pay. Beauty Gonzalez. She goes to court. She recants her story. It's known that she lied. William McCaffrey is let out on bail first, and then he's got to wait another 6 months till he's finally out of jail sometime in February of 2010. He's been waiting 4 years, ladies and gentlemen, 4 years, and they let him out on bail first before they released him, even though they know they've got a witness in their possession who flat out says they lied. They are going to talk. He's done 4 years. They charge Bjorny Gonzalez. Before I say this. Okay, let me break this down. Perjury under the law. Lying to a police officer under the law. Each is a minimum of 3 years. She had three charges of lying. She lied to the police when she gave her statement. She lied to the grand jury, ladies and gentlemen, which is perjury. And she lied on the stand in the court of law. Each one carries a minimum of 1 to 3 years in jail. Bjorny Gonzalez served 1 year. 1 year in jail. Now, there's a place that I need you to go to watch this story. Because here's why I'm bringing all of this up. Because Bjorny Gonzalez plays a very, very interesting role in all of this. There's a reason why I need you to hear this. I want you to look up the Chris Cuomo 2020 video of the Bjorny Gonzalez-William McCaffrey case. Chris Cuomo of ABC News in 2020 did the interview with Bjorny Gonzalez and the people in the case. I think they talked to William McCaffrey. I'm almost certain they did. It was a 2020 episode. Do you know near the end of this whole ordeal, they painted Bjorny Gonzalez as a victim because she's poor and comes from the Dominican Republic, saying that the reason why she lied, just watch it yourself. In essence, saying that the reason that she lied is because of where she comes from. In essence, saying because she comes from a poor background, lying is socially acceptable when you get into trouble. Saying because she got in trouble with her friends about flat leaving them at some nightclub with a whole bunch of, you know, suspect individuals. She comes back, they start whipping her ass, and she's in panic mode, and she doesn't know what to do. So to avoid getting beat down by her fellow Dominicans, she has to lie and put a man in jail. I want you to watch that interview. I'm telling you, you have to watch it. You have to see it for yourself. That a news organization is trying to paint this woman as a victim after putting a man in jail for 4 years when all he did was kiss her. She rejected his advances, gave her his telephone number, and kept it moving. And for some odd reason, she is supposed to be looked upon as some sort of poor soul. Also in that video, you have to see this. Buny Gonzalez says the reason why she got on the stand and told her story, her reasons for all of this by not coming forward and telling the truth, she said, I didn't think anything would happen to him because it wasn't true. I thought that they would see it. I thought that they would see right through it that I wasn't telling the truth. I thought that they would see it. That's what she says. She says it didn't matter that she lied, in her view. I could have lied all day. It wasn't true. They had to see through that, didn't they? Therefore, just excusing the fact is, look, I know I was lying. It don't matter. I was lying. They should have been able to see through it. They should have seen between the lies, what was bull and what was true. I was lying. They could have been seeing through it. Now, folks, bottom line is, this is the way people see rape in our society. It's always cavalier when it's bull. But don't you dare ever suggest that someone lied about it. Don't you ever suggest that something is suspect. That something is suspicious, that something just doesn't seem right. Don't you ever dare. I always hearken back to the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas case, and what Gloria Steinem said when she was on the stump. No woman makes up a story like that. So when guys like Todd Akin use a term legitimate rape, when, in essence, what he is trying to justify is not murdering an innocent child. He was completely caught up in a whole bunch of other stuff in trying to explain that. A soundbite gets completely, and I listened to it too many times, and I still don't get what the outrage is. I'm still trying to understand it. He says in cases of legitimate rape, and we're talking about abortion here, were there cases where girls lied about being raped in order to get an abortion? Yes. Are there cases where women have lied about rape in general? Yes. Does Todd Akin acknowledge that? Yes. But he had the audacity to say it. How dare he bring it up? How dare you ever say that there's a case of legitimate rape? And everybody is running around going, rape is rape, rape is rape. Well, guess what, you idiots? No, it's not. Because some rape claims are lies. Rape is not rape. Because in that case, we might as well say murder is murder. We might as well say robbery is robbery. We might as well say that grand theft is grand theft. It just is. Somebody claims that they've been raped. Somebody claims that they've been robbed. Somebody claims that someone's been shot. And whatever it is, that's a fact. Without proving it by law. Without due process. No, folks, rape is not rape until it's proven to be rape. That's that. That's it. There's no other way to put it. So are we going to now say that Buny Gonzalez, her rape was just a rape and that's it? No questions asked? Turns out not true. Are we supposed to now say that Tawana Brawley was rape, just rape, that's it? No questions asked? Not the case, is it? Heidi Jones, weather woman on ABC News, WABC in New York. She claims that she was dragged and raped in Central Park. I guess her rape is just rape. No questions asked. Turned out not to be true. Bitch got 9 days worth of community service. 9 freaking days. No, rape is not rape until it's proven to be rape. And I'm sorry to say that to you folks. but that's the truth. You don't just get to call it a rape because it's a sensitive topic. There are plenty of things in this country that are sensitive to talk about. But you've got to stop being fearful of them. And you've got to deal with them in a direct way. So when everyone else is kowtowing to this really, really stupid claim and just saying, look, we don't want women to think that we don't think that they've been... Well, I'm sorry, folks. The evidence doesn't prove it. There's no evidence to support that every claim of rape is rape. There's no evidence to support it. Not anymore. Even when one of the biggest and most scrutinized cases in the last 20, 30 years, the Central Park jogger case, takes five guys, puts them in jail for 16 years. Linda Fairstein covers that case. People are putting ads in papers, Donald Trump, about literally executing these boys for a rape that happened in a central to the Central Park jogger. Boys got arrested, did 16 years. Linda Fairstein said at the time that that rape happened, she wrote a book in 1993 that said in her office, she's only seen 5% of false rape claims in all rape claims that she saw in New York City. She wrote that in 1993. 10 years later, in a Cosmopolitan article titled Why Women Lie About Rape, she changes her story. 10 years, she does a complete 180 and says that in 4,000 cases that she covered in New York City, half of them did not happen. So you tell me where rape is rape without proof, without evidence. It's like every other crime. Everything goes through the process. Everything gets due process. We don't get to call it rape just because anybody gets to call it. Because if you look at the stats today, it turns out that there are plenty of people out there just using it. So rape is just rape when it's proven to be true. That's it.
I figured I'd just chime in on that. I wanted to make sure that I made that abundantly clear. If I pissed anybody else off about it, I don't give a shit. I don't. I don't care who hears it.
You better prove it under the law. And for people out there, especially women out there who have been raped, who have been abused, absolutely, you have my support. I 100% support you and getting justice for you and to make sure you get that piece of garbage off the streets. Okay? And if you got the evidence to back it up, absolutely, you should get full justice. But you've got to send a message out there, too, to those who are abusing the law and abusing these claims in order to get what they want for some of the dumbest reasons. Like failing a biology class, like it was in my case. A man spent 2 years, 5 months in jail because some girl failed a biology class and couldn't take that her mother was angry about it. Needed a distraction, threw a man, his name and his reputation, under a bus. And destroyed him just over a biology grade, folks. Suck that.
hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is Afterburner. The Rolling Stones wrote, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need." And with Mitt Romney finally taking my advice and selecting Paul Ryan as his running mate, conservatives who make up the bulk of the Republican Party only to be ignored and insulted at every opportunity, it seems, not only get what we want, but we also get what the country needs. First, let's go to what we want. Conservatives understand, especially Tea Party conservatives, understand that the existential threat to this nation is not Al-Qaeda or a nuclear Iran or illegal immigration or crumbling infrastructure or falling education scores or global warming or killer bee infestation. It's none of that. The only thing out there that has the power to destroy our way of life, to utterly render our lives unrecognizable, is the impending worldwide economic collapse that is coming and will happen, and sooner rather than later, if we do not get this insane, pathological, terminal spending under control. Now, to date, there's only been one politician on the national scene. Think of that. Of the 535 Americans that actually live in a democracy, the 435 House members and the 100 senators who actually get to have a say in what goes on out there, out of all of them, only one, has a serious plan to stop this train before it plummets off the rails and goes over the cliff. And that one person is Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 2012. And the Democrats are terrified of this guy. Terrified. Because simply listening to him speak for 20 or 30 seconds utterly flummoxes them. All Republicans, you see, have to wear one, if not two, or all three of three labels. Republicans are either evil, stupid, or old. So let's play along. John McCain, old. Sarah Palin, stupid and probably evil. George Bush, stupid and definitely evil. Dick Cheney, old and evil. Ronald Reagan, old and stupid. Newt Gingrich, old and evil. And of course, Mitt Romney, who's clearly neither old nor stupid, therefore has to be painted as triply evil. But what do they do with Paul Ryan? He's not old, he's young. He's brilliant, he's not stupid, and he's likable and agreeable, so he's not evil. So they'll have to paint him as an extremist. But now the question becomes, who's the real extremist on the American spectrum? The two Boy Scouts? Or dog-eating Mr. You Didn't Build That. Ryan fires up conservatives the way Sarah Palin did for McCain, but Ryan will not be Palinized. Let's see Katie Couric ask Paul Ryan what magazines he reads. He'll probably say something like, Katie, you know, I spend 15 hours a day tearing apart 3,000-page health care bills, running statistical analyses of their pluses and minuses, comparing them with best and worst case estimates of revenues and shortfalls, and then I assign relative financial efficiency and effectiveness weighted variables to assess the best possible outcome. So I don't get a lot of time to read magazines, but when I do, I kind of like Field and Stream. Palinize that. Well, I think Paul Ryan is the best way to win, but I know that Ryan is the best way to lose. I think we're going to win this election. I really do. And if we do, Paul Ryan on the ticket means some form of the Ryan plan, and that means a mandate to get the spending under control. But if we lose, we need to lose with the Ryan plan, because if we lose, it will mean that America, unlike Wisconsin, has not yet faced up to the full scale of the mismanagement, greed, waste, and corruption that have bankrupted the richest nation in the history of the world. I'm not sure that a Romney-Ryan administration will be able to defuse this debt bomb, but I am utterly convinced that under Obama too, that bomb will explode. We stand on the razor's edge, and the American people need to hear it, and they will hear it now. And if we are still a great people, we will do what the people of Wisconsin did. We'll follow belt-tightening plan, we'll take our medicine, and we'll start to get better. Or we'll do what Greece and France did a few months ago. We'll vote for pie. Everybody loves pie. Just keep the pie coming. When the pie stops coming and money has no value anymore, the American people will need to know that they had a choice, and they also need to know who was warning them and telling them to take their medicine, because then we will not have gotten away with a haircut and a bitter taste in our mouths. Then we'll be fighting for our lives, and that's when we will really need courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adults like Paul Ryan, and the courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adult like the man that chose him as his running mate.
Sisters on the Radio. We're back, bottom of the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. August 22nd, 2012. I apologize, folks, if I am having some issues with the microphone. I don't know exactly what the issue is. You know, continuing into the discussion of what happened with this Paul Akin thing, here's another example of what it is that I'm talking about. I know there's a piece. I got to find this, and I'm probably going to play it tomorrow from MRC TV. And it's a story about how the left consistently tries to take stories and attribute them to certain groups because of the nature of the case. I saw this yesterday. I'm surprised we didn't get to it. But I think it was because we have Malcolm Out Loud on. We didn't get a chance to. But a former University of Nebraska woman basketball star faked an attack where she allegedly carved anti-gay slurs into her skin because she felt it would spark change, police said. Now, I'm going to read you the story because I think this is very, very much in tone with what it is that I just said. They say 4 days before Charlie Rogers crawled naked and bleeding from her Lincoln home screaming for help, she outlined in a Facebook posting what investigators to believe was her motive for faking the July 22nd act. She wrote, "So maybe I'm too idealistic, but I believe way deep inside me that we can make things better for everyone. I will be a catalyst. I will do what it takes. I will. Watch me," according to the posting on Facebook. Furthermore, genetic testing on evidence gathered at the crime scene undermines Charlie Rogers' account of what happened. Now, Charlie Rogers is 33 years old. She pled not guilty Tuesday for making a false police report and was released on her own recognizance. She didn't respond to a message seeking comment left Tuesday at a number listed as hers. But her lawyer, Brett MacArthur, said she maintains the attack happened and plans to vigorously defend herself. This has been a very traumatic event for her, and having the focus of the investigation turned towards her has been really hard. She has no reason to lie about what happened. She's pretty devastated. When you go to authorities and things kind of get turned around on you. Rogers is a lesbian who ranks second all time in block shots for the Cornhuskers. She reported the attack amid a charged debate in Lincoln over the city's proposed fairness ordinance, which would ban discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. The city council, approved the ordinance in May 5-0, but two conservative groups gathered enough signatures to force a popular vote on it before it can take effect. According to police, Rogers said that three masked men broke into her home and that one of them pinned her down and sliced her across the chest, cut the front of her thighs and shins, carved derogatory words in her arms and abdomen, said then they rolled her onto her stomach, cut her buttocks and back, and the backs of her thighs, and the back of her right calf. She also said they tried to burn down her house. The cops have turned this investigation on her. Folks, the cops have turned the investigation on her. And she has all of these cuts and bruises on her. Ask yourself a question. And I'm going to be as fair as I possibly can be. Either the cops see something really, really odd here, or this broad is sick. Anyway, let me move on. They say Rogers crawled from her home naked, bleeding, and screaming for help. Neighbors told
Neighbors told police the community's gay community responded swiftly, and hundreds turned out for a rally that weekend outside the state capitol. On Tuesday, four Nebraska gay rights groups that followed the case released a joint statement crediting police for conducting what they believe was a balanced and thorough investigation. They say, quote, "It is important not to focus on the actions of any single individual," the group said in a statement. "As residents of Lincoln, we must continue to bring our community together and declare that violence and hate are not the values of our city." According to the police, they found a pile of clothes, white knit gloves, a red box cutter on the living room floor after the alleged attack. Rogers said the gloves didn't belong to her, but investigators determined that a lot of the DNA found inside the glove was Rogers, and that none of it came from a male. Investigators discovered that Rogers deleted numerous text messages she had sent the evening of the alleged attack, that she brought cotton gloves, a box cutter, and zip ties from Ace Hardware in Lincoln on July 17th. All of the items were later found in her house. When confronted about the evidence weeks later, he said Rogers admitted to purchasing all of the items except the gloves. There's no other way to go here, folks. The desperate lengths that people are willing to go to prove a point. For Christ's sake, folks, anybody remember the guy who worked for the Census Bureau who freaking hung himself? The man killed himself in order to spark outrage against the Tea Party. He took his own life to try to martyr himself and to have people believe that he was murdered. And the press jumped on it like a Mexican jumping bean. So, you know, I look at these cases, and by the way, find me a conservative who pulls this stunt. Please, somebody, find me one. Oh, and I've said this before. Yeah, my accuser, stone cold liberal, gay rights activist, the whole nine. Real, real liberal, anti-war knucklehead. Absolutely. These are the only people who are conditioned to lie to prove a point. These are the only people who throw their kids into the mix whenever it's profitable for them. And I don't mean financially, just in any way profitable. Look at the old tapes of Jimmy Carter talking about, somebody asked him a question about nuclear war. You know, my six-year-old daughter, Amy, asked me that exact same thing about nuclear war. Give me a break, Jimmy Carter. I doubt your six-year-old daughter cared about nuclear war. Malia, I mean, was it Sasha or Malia, whatever one, walks into Obama while he's shaving. Daddy, when are you going to plug the hole in the Gulf? These people are relentless, ruthless pieces of garbage. Can you believe somebody slicing up their, hey, Tawana Brawley did it. Took charcoal and smudges and put words on her stomach. Took animal feces and rubbed it on her body. I mean, come on. Ugh. Our number is 347-308-8701. Let's take a call from Dennis in Massachusetts. Hello, Dennis. How are you today?
Hello, Reese. You know, this is the place to come for if you don't want to be politically correct.
That's, you're absolutely right there.
And I was just reading this story in the Telegraph in Britain. And here's the headline today, and I figure this will really push your buttons. 1 in 9 rape complaints written off by police. Police choose not to investigate rape complaints more often than any other type of violent crime, as 1 in 9 allegations are written off, new analysis shows. And this is what got me. You remember the problem about Julian Assange?
Oh, Julian Assange, yes.
Assange, whatever the hell his name
is. Yeah. Julian Assange from WikiLeaks.
Right. Is he's holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy?
Yeah.
And they said the data comes amid fresh controversy over the high-profile allegations of sexual assault facing Assange. So, you know, I'm wondering, is this trumped up?
You know,
with
interesting
this guy?
You
I have mixed feelings because naturally
don't.
I want American security, and
Dennis,
I don't like leaks, but
Dennis,
you know, on the other end.
Do not be conflicted about this story. Let me tell you something.
Okay?
Let me, don't be. I'll help you here. Okay?
Thank you.
Julian Assange is a scumbag for what he's doing on WikiLeaks. That goes without saying. The fact that he's putting people in harm's way, the fact that
that's what I felt too.
You know, that's the bottom line. A separate issue. The bottom line is that these sex allegations against him are 100% false. Okay? These were trumped up 100%, but you have to understand why they were brought up. Okay? Julian Assange, in many ways, was being lauded. He was being touted as this great person that was letting the world know what the government wouldn't let us know. You know, the conspiracy theorist.
Right.
He's a conspiracy theorist wet dream. You know, things that we thought about the government, Julian Assange is revealing. And these guys are sitting up there loving that. But you can't have your government secrets go out like that. And so you've got to demonize a guy like this by getting people at their heartstrings. And the way that you do that is that even though Julian Assange is allowing these, you know, these conspiracy theorists, you know, these ex-filers, if you will, even though he's really, really gotten to the hearts and minds of these people and they consider him a hero, they'll never, ever, never, ever stand behind a guy who's accused of rape, because that's an ugly crime. They back off their support then. So you use that against him. And have you read the allegations against him? These women say that they were out on a date with him. They say that he was kind of a cad, kind of a piece of garbage. He was kind of rude and full of himself. But everyone asked the question of, was this rape? Well, when the story first broke, it was rape. Julian Assange accused of rape in England. Then the story changed. Then it was sexual assault. Then it was allegations of sexual abuse. So it's always changed. When the story first broke, it was rape. It was flat-out rape. Now they've lessened it to these simpler crimes, like it was some sort of like maybe he grabbed someone's rear end or he touched a breast. You know what I mean? So it got really watered down.
Now, this is all with the internet. Imagine what went on, the crap that went on before we had the internet and we just had newspapers and just the three main networks.
But again,
how people's reputations were smeared.
Right. When the story first broke, it was people were hurting. I was like, Julian Assange. Then he was enemy number one. The fact that he was giving away secrets, when the Julian Assange story broke and you actually did some polling, there were more people, especially in our country, who were saying, yeah, man, I'm sick and tired of the government keeping secrets, man. This guy is giving up the goods. You know people like that, Dennis. I know people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are people out there who are really, really sort of behind that idea of letting us know what's really going on. The government is never telling the truth to us. We can't trust our government.
I know people who think that Katrina was a government plot.
Absolutely.
And you can't get through to their thick heads.
Exactly. They believe that what the HARP machine was responsible. You know, that the HARP machine, which in and of itself, that theory has been running around since the 90s.
Well, the Jews killed Abe Lincoln in a time machine.
Right. But the bottom line is that once that story got out and people heard the rape allegations, then they noticed that people started to back away. But, of course,
right,
fact checkers went out there and started to dig up the story. The New York Post, which when I read it, all of a sudden started to explain what it was he was being accused of. There wasn't one accusation of rape. Not one. All it had to do was that he did something sexually inappropriate. So
isn't the corollary with the Strauss-Kahn story? Everybody had the knives out for this guy at the beginning.
The Strauss-Kahn case, and the first thing that ran through my mind about Strauss-Kahn, again, another socialist. This guy is a scumbag. He's a cad as well. But think about this story. The guy's a billionaire, right? He's a billionaire. He gets arrested. He gets the perp walk in the whole nine yards. 2 days after it happened, I get a newspaper article where a high-profile madam is on TV and in the news talking about how Dominique Strauss-Kahn is one of her biggest clients when he comes into New York City. And that immediately piqued my interest. And I said, wait a minute. This guy's going to do it with some nondescript maid that walks into his hotel room when this guy can just, you know, he could just drop a couple thou and get any prostitute he wants in a couple of minutes flat. He's at the Sofitel. I mean, he can get a prostitute anytime he wants. It just seemed eerie. And as
he could call up Bill Clinton and they could both go at it with that kind of money.
It has started to unfold. What was even scarier, the part that threw me for a complete loop in this whole story with Dominique Strauss-Kahn, as the pieces started to come together, when the story came out that he was the front runner against Sarkozy in France, I was like, now, okay, I'm not going to go into conspiracy theory. I don't think anybody would do that.
Right.
I kept saying to myself, why is this guy going after some African girl in a hotel room? This guy's French. I was like, I don't know the French to really, really be into black chicks like that, especially Africans. Something about this is seeming really, really eerie. So as it starts to unfold, of course you find out that all of this is bogus. She's calling her boyfriend in prison saying, he's got a lot of money, I'll take care of this. She's caught in a scam where the boyfriend in Arizona is funneling money through her bank account, $5,000, $7,000 at a time. She lied about a rape to get amnesty in the United States. I mean, all of that just played a... You know, all of that just fell right into play. And Julian Assange is the same thing. And that's why I look at this case. This is a woman. This is a woman, a college basketball player. She's 33 years old. Forget about the fact that she's lesbian. But the fact that she would buy a razor blade, a box cutter, and gloves, and carve her body up, Dennis. Carve her body up. To make a statement or to lie and say she was attacked because of her sexual orientation, and to bring attention to her cause, to carve up your own body, I'm stuck. At this particular point, Dennis, I'll tell you exactly where I am right now. Nothing is beyond the pale. Nothing.
Well, what do you expect? You had Tawana Brawley when the so-called black leadership was in lockstep behind her, and then when it was proven it was a fake, cue the crickets.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. Hey, look at the Duke Lacrosse case. I stopped talking about this young lady who went there, lied, said that these individuals raped her, even though one of them had a time stamp and a video stamp of him at the bank getting money out of the ATM at the time that she claimed that he was in the house. The fact that Al Sharpton and even Jesse Jackson went so far as to say that they were going to pay for a college education, it's some years later after Duke Lacrosse, and this broad is in jail for murder. Killing her boyfriend. And just a piece of trash. And again, I always bring the argument. This is why I brought the argument up today. I don't want to hear any more crap about rape is rape. It's not unless it's proven under the law. We don't just...
Well, do you think that there's a lot of things that are being swept under the rug because of political correctness?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that's what everyone's been caught up in when it comes to this case.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Larry Brinken case.
Why does that sound familiar to me?
Because the San Francisco District Attorney has yet to file charges against gay rights icon Larry Brinken.
Oh, Larry Brinken.
The 66-year-old Brinken was arrested on 22 June on suspicion of possessing child porn.
Oh, and one of the emails that he had, I'll never forget, it was a feature on ReeseOnTheRadio.com. I believe that one picture which says I like the photo of the nigger kid getting it. It was a 5-year-old black child. One of the emails that the police confiscated was referring to the 5-year-old black child being molested as a nigger.
Of course, you won't hear anything but crickets because...
No, and again,
you know, liberal icon. Double standard.
The New York Post did an article about it, and I know the L.A. Times covered it. That much I know, but it was one story. But wait a minute, they're not prosecuting Larry Brinken?
They have yet to file charges. Said last month, Ong Stillman, Ong, whatever the hell his name, O-N-G, that's his first name, said the DA's office was waiting for computer evidence before filing charges. That was last month. Richard French, spokesman for the LAPD, which gave the original tip leading to Brinken's arrest, said he knew of the case but was not aware of any follow-up that had been done since handing over to the San Francisco Police Department.
And again, more than likely because he is a quote-unquote gay icon in the San Francisco area.
The DA spokesman, Stephanie Ong Stillman, and assistant Alex Bastian have not responded to requests by MichaelSavage.com for comment. Not to give a plug
Savage
to a competitor.
Is on this story.
Yeah, I got this from
that's fine. Listen, I have no competitors, man. I have admiration. You know, all of these guys, these people who do this, I don't consider them competition. I don't consider them my competition or anything like that. I have, especially if they're conservatives. My only competition are liberals.
No, I thought your main competition you were in fear of was Julian Show, but he comes on before you, so you're okay.
Oh, you talking about Justin?
Justin, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Justin Show. Nah, he's fine. I think he's going to be fine. In fact, at the top of the hour, because I'm going to take a break now. At the top of the hour, I got some great. I'm sure you saw that. I've got some great news about my son.
Yes, I saw that yesterday on the Facebook.
Oh, is that
congratulations
great?
To him.
Yeah, I'm really happy. I'm really happy about that. But we'll talk about that at the top of the hour. I definitely want to at least give him some praise for doing that. I'm really, really excited for him. And I finally got the radio station, and hopefully they'll be able to listen online. But I'll take a break now. We'll be back shortly. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going back. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gottavote.org to register now. That's gottavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
He said, I am the Joker. Whatever. Once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman. So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolia was playing. He just said, I was Steel Magnolia.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. Michael Simon. Never forget him. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
because he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest facts. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here. Minutes to the top of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is Reese on the Radio. Let me get back after the top of the hour. Of course, I have to congratulate my son Caleb on his new gig, which I'm extremely excited about. I'm pretty sure you guys already saw it on Facebook. If you haven't, we'll talk about that at the top of the hour. Also, it is important that we talk about this onslaught of movies that are coming out against Barack Obama that have been getting a lot of media attention as far as, you know, a lot of attention in at least print media. There's Dinesh D'Souza, Citizens United, and why am I forgetting the name of this group, but it'll come to me, but there's another group of people in the intelligence field who also have a film out. There are a lot of films coming out about Barack Obama that are happening within the next couple of it's actually one already out. Another one's coming out during the RNC on Sunday. And I'm trying to remember the other one is a 22 minute movie, I guess, or commercial or whatever it is. There's a lot of these coming out, but we'll talk about that as well. Also, there's a judge in Texas that says that he is preparing for what he calls a civil war that might be happening. A civil war, he believes, is going to be happening within if President Obama is reelected. We'll get into all of that when we return. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
twice. He's really trying to use racial coding and access some really deep stereotypes about the angry black man. This is part of the playbook against Obama, the otherization. He's not like us. I know it's a heavy thing to say, I don't say it lightly, but this is a niggerization. You are not one of us, and that you are like the scary black man who we've been trained to see.
Didn't think I'd use that one as a top of the hour, did you? It's Reese on the Radio, 1 minute after the hour on blogtalkradio.com, August the 22nd, 2012. Okay, so the movie 2016 is a, you could call it Barack Obama's Fahrenheit 9/11. Apparently, this movie has been selling out in theaters, even in the second most liberal state in the country, New York. And people are watching this film. Dr. Thomas Sowell, I always pronounce his name wrong, but you know who I mean. Thomas Sowell drove 30 miles, I hear today. He drove 30 miles to go see Dinesh D'Souza's new movie, 2016. He drove 30 miles to see it because they don't show it in his hometown. When he got there, he watched the movie. I couldn't believe it when I heard it. He sat on the floor, on the steps. It was literally people sitting and standing inside the theater watching it. And according
and what
to
movie is
this? This is 2016. This is the book that this is a movie based upon the book that Dinesh D'Souza wrote, which I read, which is called The Roots of Obama's Rage. And what Dinesh D'Souza does is pretty much break down Obama's two books, you know, his two bestsellers, and also visited, you know, people that he knew, breaks down the people that he grew up with, where he gets his train of thought, what his mindset was, based upon what his book and his autobiographies, you know, that kind of stuff. And apparently this movie is the second highest grossing documentary of the year.
Well, I'm sure.
And it's playing all over the place. Now, it's only showing in a little over 60 theaters. But because of the response...
Oh, it's not showing all over the place.
No. Hold on. Because of the response, it's now been bumped up to over 1,400. Yeah. Because the response has been heavy. People have been requesting it. But here's
what...
Is that
like 300%?
Yeah, it's a crap load. It's actually a little more than 300%. But yeah, it's a crap load. Now distributors, everybody wants this movie. Everybody wants to see it. Everyone's dying to go check it out. Fine, the interest is great. But here's what it is that's been happening. That there are certain places, according to reports, that if you actually look up to see what are the scheduled show times for the movie 2016... they're not listed anywhere. There are also movie theaters in certain areas that refuse to actually show the film.
What?
Even though there is a high demand of it.
What?
Now, this is, again, this is typical.
Who's running the damn movie theater?
Well, I don't know. But, of course, liberals. No, listen, anything that's going to be bashing Obama, they're not going to allow in the theaters. That's a fact. But
yeah,
in that
but
sense,
who's not going to allow? Who has authority
people,
not to allow?
Business. This is their private business. The movie theater is their private business. If they don't want to show it, they don't want to show it. But again, they would, again, would they? But see, again, you have
so
to.
So you're even if you're a liberal. It's been a long day, people. Even if you're a liberal, are you that stupid?
Yes.
You're that stupid that you wouldn't. Who cares?
Did you not hear Dennis yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Said,
no, yes, I did.
Dead.
I mean, you're brain dead to the point where you're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Absolutely.
You're not going to show a movie in your theater, and you're not going to make the money that you could make in your theater because of your ideological views.
Absolutely.
Well, F you, idiot.
Well, of course, yeah, you're gonna lose out. It's their right to do so. But the fact that they're...
I'll never frequent those... Not that I ever frequent movie theaters, but I'll never frequent that theater.
What I find amazing is that people cannot find the movie when they try to check showtimes of the of where it's showing. That even if it's showing at a particular theater, certain areas that you try to find. Like if you look up online at Yahoo and you want to find out if the theater that's near you is showing the movie, even if it's there, they can't find showtimes for the film. Now, what I find strikingly odd about this is, if anybody remember the numbers? I'm sure most people do remember the numbers of Fahrenheit 9/11.
What's the name of this movie?
Just look up 2016. It's about 2016 movie. I'm almost certain that's the best way to find it. I cannot believe I'm going to see it. Anyway. Fahrenheit 9/11, I believe, grossed somewhere over, well, it had to do over $150. I'm almost certain it did over $200 million. It's the most successful documentary in history. But that was widely watched. When I saw Fahrenheit 9/11, I watched it. It was August. It was in Hartford, Connecticut. It was in a theater that's on I-84 that's now closed down, or at least it was closed down since I've left. But it was closed down. I went in there, and it was a packed audience as well. And, of course, it's bashing Bush, and people loved it, and it did well. And for crying out loud, you know, did he win an Oscar for that one? I don't know if he won an Oscar for Best Documentary on that one. He may have. He may have. I'm not exactly certain. But we'll ask the guys, of course. But Dinesh D'Souza is getting critical acclaim. In fact, if you go to the Hollywood Reporter and read the review of 2016, they actually say that this movie will only appeal to Obama haters.
What?
That's what they say. That's what the review says. So they're not happy about this film as well. We'll bring Dennis and, of course, Mike in Florida in on this. Have you guys had an issue finding this film in your areas? Because I know, Dennis, you're in.
Well, I know that Michael Moore didn't get an Oscar, but he got a sandwich with loads of fat. Maybe a Baconator.
No, what did he win? I know he won.
I was just looking at the 2016 website. And strangely enough, I fell upon on 24 August, it opens up in many theaters in Northern Virginia. So I wonder who we know that could be there, in Arlington and Alexandria.
There's a whole bunch
of places there, but
Dennis,
pardon
me? Is it opening up at Potomac Mills in Woodbridge, Virginia?
Yes.
Oh, beautiful.
AMC Potomac Mills, 18 Woodbridge, Virginia. That's on 24 August.
And what day is that, August 24th?
That's Friday.
Well, that's Friday.
Well, Reese's sister is coming into town for the weekend, so...
she'll love to see this movie.
Well, no, but Liam's going to be with her. We can't take Liam to go watch 2016. Come on. he's two, for Christ's sake.
He'll enjoy
it. You'd probably sit and explain the whole thing to him.
I would.
Oh, my God. So we will be going to see it, though, after that.
I find it amazing that this movie has really caught on. It is. I don't care what anybody says. If you can't associate it with this film, I believe that this movie clearly is the Fahrenheit 9/11. Fahrenheit 9/11 nearly grossed nearly $120 million at the U.S. box office and over $220 million worldwide.
So another,
and this is the part
another $100 million outside of the U.S.
Yeah, and this is the part that freaks me out. Lionsgate Films released a movie called, and I'm sure Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, The Assassination of George W. Bush?
Ooh.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
Okay. Now, again.
I think I don't know how big a movie that was.
No. It wasn't huge. It did not do, but it was shown here in the United States. I should know. How do I know this? You're going to laugh.
Because you want to go see it.
No. I saw that movie in jail.
Wow.
It was a British mockumentary.
Yep.
I remember that.
I'm looking at the 2016 website also. I just checked Florida releases, and, buddy, it's getting a huge release here. It must be tied in with Regal Cinemas and AMC, because I'm looking at this weekend, it's opening at the the theater in my little town.
Wow.
Mike, what town do you live in Florida? You live in Tampa, right?
I'm not going to tell you because the Black Panthers will find me.
The new Black Panthers.
Yeah, the new Black Panthers.
Okay.
I'm
going to
get chased down by Michelle Williams and Sean Colley.
Well, inbox me.
But I will tell you that the county I live in has about 100,000 people. And the town it's going to play in has about 30,000 people.
Well, that's large for a county, don't you think?
Geographically wise, no. I mean, there's 100,000 people in my whole county. And there's probably 500,000 in Tampa.
Right, I got you.
Mike, aren't there, doesn't Florida have the worst unemployment rate in the country?
I think it's pretty close, man.
Nevada's at 13.
Yeah, but I think Florida is...
Florida's at 9.7.
No, I think Florida has the... Or they've had... No, maybe it was that Florida has had the largest unemployment rate for the longest amount of time.
That's correct.
Like
Nevada's hiring.
What is it?
Nevada is hiring. They're hiring people to clean up after Prince Harry's mess.
According to the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, the state with the worst unemployment is actually Nevada.
It is Nevada, right? What
it is, 12 or 13%?
12%. And right before them is Rhode Island. Right before them is California. And, gee, you think California at 10.7% might want to, close their border.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, right.
That is insanity.
And the state with the lowest unemployment rate is North Dakota.
Wow. You
3%.
No, but let me tell you why. North Dakota.
That's pretty odd because there's only about maybe 13, 14 people in Rhode Island.
tell them why, Reese.
There is the reason why is because that state in North Dakota, they had a windfall. They're actually producing their own oil. And if I'm and you can correct me if I'm wrong, they were actually going to have a vote. They said that the windfall in that state has been so great that they were actually going to vote. They actually voted to find out whether or not no one had to pay property taxes anymore in North Dakota. And they still
are looking to import people to live there because a lot of people don't want to live there.
Yeah, not anymore. That was before they found this field.
Yeah.
Now North Dakota is booming so much you can't even get a hotel room, man.
Yeah,
the hotel rooms are all filled up with oil workers.
Great. Trust me, the place is in a surplus.
So wow, I mean, should we move there?
It's way too far north.
Why?
You might stand out in the snow.
Strippers are making $10,000 a week in North Dakota.
Say that again.
What?
Strippers are making $10,000 a week in North Dakota.
Wow.
Okay,
well,
there's been a massive exodus of strippers from all over the world heading to North Dakota to cater to the oil workers.
Yeah, exactly. Cater to the oil workers. They had literally, that state has been booming.
They been having some tremors there, though, lately?
No.
From the McDonald's workers there are making $15 an hour.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But then again, if that's the case, that means that prices for the basics must be high, too, because of supply and demand.
And there's no
place
for there.
Balance
is out. Living intense.
Yeah, I mean, how much is it for a value meal at McDonald's if the cashier is getting 15 bucks an hour?
We have the $5 value meal. Now, today only for $5. Tomorrow will be $6.
Well, and you can make all that money, but you don't have the roof over your head.
What did you say? It was a blue book value on a value meal? That's what I heard you say.
And the state with the second lowest is Nebraska. Why Nebraska? I have no idea. But
speaking of McDonald's, get rid of your stock all of a sudden. I don't know if you heard the breaking news.
No, what's the breaking news? They're attacking Michelle Obama?
No. Well, she's you can't get between her and a sandwich. I know that. But this is out of Fresno, AP. The federal government and McDonald's Corp. suspended purchase of meat Wednesday from a California slaughterhouse under investigation for animal cruelty and possible health issues.
And it also turns out that In-N-Out Burger gets a lot of their meat from that place.
From the same place. I was just going to say,
Central Valley Meat.
I just heard that report today that In-N-Out Burger, they're having some issues with a farm that they've been getting their meat from. So McDonald's has been getting their beef from the same place.
Fast food chain joined the USDA in severing ties with Central Valley Meat Company. Suspensions occurred after an animal welfare group's covert video showed cows, not Michelle, that appeared to be sick or lame being beaten. Go ahead, Risha. I can hear you laughing. I said Michelle. Being beaten, kicked, shot, and shocked in an attempt to get them to walk to slaughter. Behaviors in the video, which appear to be unacceptable and would not adhere to the standards we demand of our suppliers, McDonald's said in a release. And the U.S. DA uses it for the school lunch programs that
supply. Yeah, you wonder why every now and then people get sick from eating ground beef.
Well, that's odd because I thought that McDonald's was getting their burgers from Lopez.
Well, okay, first of all, what McDonald's serves is not ground beef. Okay, I don't know what it is, but it ain't ground beef.
Yeah, I just can't do it. That's an interesting question.
It is ground beef.
No,
it's not. I can't eat a burger. I cannot. The only sandwich I would eat, I won't even eat chicken from there. The only sandwich I will eat from there, which it sounds probably really stupid that I would eat this but not the other, is a fish fillet.
Yeah.
I will not eat any other type of meat or poultry from McDonald's.
Well, let me ask you this, because it is an interesting thing. And guys, I don't know whether or not you've noticed this. If you've been to both Burger King or McDonald's or even Wendy's for that matter, I don't know if this is about, maybe it's biological with me, but anytime I eat a McDonald's burger, there is a very, very different feeling in my stomach that I get from any one of the other chains, and it's always bowel involved, if you get my meat.
Yeah, it runs right through you.
I don't know if it's the meat as so much as it is the chemical engineering that goes into everything else in the sandwich.
Right.
God knows how many ingredients are in the bun and what's in the French fry grease. Who knows, man?
All I know is when I worked at McDonald's years ago,
a bun is a bun. A piece of lettuce is a lettuce. A pickle is a pickle. It's the meat. It's the mystery meat that's on that.
Everything is frozen now, though. When I worked at McDonald's in 1966, everything was fresh.
Yeah, I mean, when I worked there in 87, 88, it's all frozen.
Yeah,
everything was fresh.
Listen, Burger King's burgers are all frozen as well. They put them through, you know, this
conveyor belt
broiler type oven. Okay, you put them in frozen and they come out. They taste different than McDonald's hamburgers.
Could it be the cooking
Wendy's,
process though?
It tastes different than McDonald's hamburgers.
No, all they do is fry them, man. It's just a grilled burger. So I don't know what to do.
I guess you're gonna have to switch to buffalo.
But you know, if you saw that movie,
it tastes good. I like buffalo ground beef.
What was the movie Morgan Spurlock did, where he ate 30 days at McDonald's?
Right. What was it, Super Size Me was the film?
Yeah, and he said that you get the McDonald's brick in your stomach when you eat it. And
yeah.
Yeah, I try to avoid all that stuff except for Five Guys.
Now, Five Guys, I
deserve a break today, so get out and get away to McDonald's. We do it all for you, or do it all to you.
I'm looking at the unemployment stats, man, and it seems like the places to be, the only place on the East Coast with a low unemployment rate is New Hampshire. And believe it or not, Massachusetts is number 12. Everything else is Midwest.
What's Virginia and D.C.?
Virginia, let's see.
Virginia.
Let me see. 13, 14.
No, it's at
8. Virginia is at 10, 5.9%.
And do they differentiate Virginia from Northern Virginia?
They have D.C. at 8.9.
Mm. And don't forget, New Hampshire has no income tax and no sales tax.
Right.
And
it also has no
motorcycle
helmet law and no seatbelt law. Live free or die, and they take it literally.
You
have over 400 state reps, and the state reps get only $100 a year.
Where is this?
You know, Vermont does not require you to have a permit to carry a concealed handgun.
Interesting.
Vermont doesn't what?
doesn't allow.
They don't play up there either.
Yeah, Vermont, where even the redneck drive Volvos.
Where even the rednecks drive Volvos. I love it. So you don't. So you can have a concealed weapon and you don't need a permit for it.
Yep, it's there in Wyoming, believe it or not. Of course, Wyoming's not surprising.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, what about Connecticut?
Connecticut? I don't know about Connecticut's permit situation, but unemployment-wise is they're 36. They're 8.5%.
Reese, you want to see a great movie done by a communist, a French communist, that could have some relevance to today? The Sorrow and the Pity, about the German occupation in France and how all the beautiful people decided to go over to Hitler, and it's all been covered up. And that has a lot of relevance to today, how people in power or people who want to be powerful, they seem to ignore what's right in front of them, a tyranny. And I think we have that with the current administration.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to get into this story coming out of Texas. There's this Lubbock County judge named Tom Head. He says he's convinced that Mr. Obama winning a second term would lead to a revolt by the American people, and he's pushing a tax increase for the district attorney's office and the Lubbock County Sheriff's Office. He says that the money is needed to beef up its resources in the case President Obama wins in November. He says,
imagine if it was proven finally, without doubt, that he wasn't a president born in the United States. Then you're going to have a civil war, too, with the liberals and the blacks against everybody else. And maybe that's why that they're not pushing this. I've heard there would be a civil war, because then everything that he ever did in the past 4 years is invalid, including Supreme Court and every decision.
Well,
that's
if they
a real constitutional crisis.
Off the Supreme Court, that would be a bonus.
Say again. Oh, yeah, well, right. Right, exactly. Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, that's it. It's over.
But I believe we're headed for social unrest, but it's going to tie into economic failure. I put out a tweet the other day that showed the history of Weimar Germany and what happened in Weimar Germany before they, collapsed and Hitler took over. And the comparisons are very shocking. What took Weimar Germany down was the devaluation of their currency. It got to a point at one time where a loaf of bread in Weimar Germany was something like $630 million.
And you know why? It's because of the French. The French did that to the Reich.
And people were burning.
They demanded
money
and Germany didn't have the money. They said, "Screw you, France! We'll just print money out of nothing." And that's what led to the inflation in Weimar Deutschland.
And then, how is that different than the Federal Reserve printing money out of thin air here?
Oh, absolutely.
Don't see a difference.
I don't.
Well, even the people in the Federal Reserve are saying that they need to stop doing this. You can't just,
But this sounds eerily similar to what happened when Russia fell. I mean, wasn't bread up to like 600 rubles or something?
The same thing happened in the Africans, happened in Zimbabwe. I mean, Rhodesia.
Happening
was
now
printing
in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe.
They were printing out multi-million dollar notes. Dude, our national debt is $16 trillion. But we have something like, according to the Comptroller General, David Walker, who served from 1998 to 2008, the government's real financial burden is close to $70 trillion.
Really?
Because the national debt does not account for obligations like Social Security, Medicare, public employee pensions, and other liabilities that the government is committed to. So you have $70 trillion over the head of the government. And that's not even getting into these wacky derivatives that I don't understand that are supposed to be liable into the quadrillions of dollars. So when the government fails, I will give you the recipe for what happens. It's going to be social unrest in the cities first, because you have so many people that are fully dependent upon the government for their livelihood, that when the welfare checks don't come out and the currency devalues and stores can't continue to maintain this just-in-time stocking system they do, when the grocery stores have no money, those people are going to go looking for food somewhere.
You're going to see a taste of this later on in the year because the corn crop failed.
Oh, yeah.
And that impacts on on fuel because of short-sighted ethanol, and also because of meat prices are going to skyrocket.
Everything that had there's so many things that have corn, you know, that corn is used for. Everything's going to skyrocket.
Well, and look at the nobody thinks about the drought in the Midwest. The Mississippi River is so low now that sandbars are appearing in the middle of the river.
Wow.
If you shut down the Mississippi River and you can't ship stuff from the Midwest to the Gulf and vice versa, think what your prices for commodities do then.
Especially here in the Northeast, we're dependent on we're at the end of the trail when it comes to transportation.
Mm-hmm. And everything goes down that river, man. Everything. The economy is dependent on the Big Daddy River, Big Muddy.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I think about that every day. You know, I know that this, I just feel it. I just feel it. I know.
Because this president doesn't give a rat's ass about national security. He's more interested, completely correct, and having his parties with the hoity-toity, if you will, MSNBC and the Hollywood crowd. This guy doesn't care.
So
he really does.
I'll give you some advice, Reese, from a friend, okay?
Yes, sir.
Every time you go to the grocery store, buy some extra non-perishable stuff. Buy bags of dry beans. Buy bags of white rice, not brown, because brown has too much oil. It'll go rancid. Get yourself a vacuum sealer and start stockpiling food. Stockpile some water. Well, water, man, if you have access to water on a well, you're fine. But stockpile food, and I told you to buy a gun. Buy a gun.
You know,
buy a rifle. Buy a .22 rifle.
Mike,
you know what?
Mike, you're sounding a little scary now. I don't know where all of this went
No, I don't.
But seriously, I mean, that scares me. Seriously, I've watched programs where there are people that live, I don't forget what state it is, but there's an entire neighborhood of people that have joined together and started stockpiling things. Everyone has come together because there's all different people that have different types of, you know, employment background or whatever, horticulturalist.
Don't the Mormons believe in that also, to stock food in case something really goes terrible and they have a lot of food stores? It's one of the tenets of their faith.
Yeah, the Mormons. Mormons are required to keep a year's worth of food stocked up in their homes at all times.
Could this be 2012?
Well, hey, you know, I mean, I live in hurricane country, so I have to do it anyway. I always have 2 weeks of food ready. But you should have enough to take care of you and yours. And 22 rifle. 22 rifle will put meat on the plate.
Don't even get to prescription medicines.
Yeah.
That'll go. There'll be a lot of deaths.
Yeah, if you take any prescription meds, make sure you have a month's supply at least.
I feel like this is going to be like Hurricane Katrina minus the hurricane.
But it's Bush's fault. You know that. Don't blame
him.
I'd
like to see what happens in St. Petersburg, where the Black Panthers live, when the welfare checks don't come in.
Yeah. You're right about that. All right. We'll go to a break on a downer.
Yeah, I'm feeling very grim right now.
We'll be back. We'll talk about Caleb and his new gig. When we return, stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
Says they gonna put y'all back in chains. And when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always you're so misunderstood. And y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
examples I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break. He was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats, period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh, yeah. Whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And, of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on, that's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors, 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism. Okay. The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee, that's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors, 8 Republicans, the rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors, 10 Republicans, 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors, 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population of these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next Zonation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy.
turn down, damn it. 35 minutes after the hour on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Okay, so I spend 1 week with Justin hanging out with me here doing the show. A couple of weeks later, he goes back, visits his grandmother. Another week after that, starts his own radio show and is doing a phenomenal job.
So funny that you are just now talking, you just started talking about him, because my sister, Justin's mother, just texted me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Was it about what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so Justin starts his own radio show and is having a blast. Phone calls from everywhere. He's got an audience. He's, you know, he's sort of getting into the whole thing. You know, he's learning how to communicate. He's never done it before, but I give him credit and kudos for going out there and literally, for a kid who's kind of quiet and to himself, much more introverted than anything, is now more outgoing and involved and engaged in some of the topics and political issues. Strangely enough, for a 16-year-old kid, he's really, really passionate about. And I'm very, very happy about it.
Old soul.
Very old soul. And then I get this amazing news 2 days ago. My ex-wife instant messages me and says, Caleb is going in for an interview at a hip-hop radio station. Where did that come from? I didn't hear anything about it. Didn't even know he had any aspirations. I can't say that. He did say he was interested in it. And I remember back in 2008 when he was living with me up in Boston, he asked, do you think I can do this? He had been on the air with me a couple of times. He had taken phone calls, because I would tell the audience, the first day he came in, the first day I brought him in, I think it was during like a spring break, winter break, I should say, and I brought him in, and he thought he was going to be in the studio with me, just sitting up chatting it up, you know, about, you know, regular conversations. So I said, no. I said, I want you to sit in a room with my producer, Bill Cooksey, and I said, I want you to take phone calls. We didn't have a guy taking phone calls then. Cooksey took all the phone calls. So we trained him on that real briefly, what it is he need to do, answer the phone, reset the radio, take down the name, put it into the computer so I can see it. And so just to set him up, he sits there, and I don't tell anybody. And then finally, as I go through my opening monologue, then I say, well, you know, as I always would say, and said, that's just my opinion. You know, that's my opinion. What do you think? And I said, you know, give us a call, and I give out the call number, and I say, as an added bonus, my son Caleb is answering the phones, so call him up if you've got a comment and say hello to Caleb. And the phones flooded, as they would. This is a 16-year-old boy, and he's never done this before. I completely bombarded him with phone calls. The phones are ringing off the hook. But, of course, everyone's calling to say, hey, hi, Caleb, how are you? Oh, your dad's so great. You know, that's all that stuff. And I loved it. He had a great time. Next thing you know, I brought him back in to put him back on the air, and I actually gave him an assignment. I had him go down to follow a protest and see what it was that they were handing out. And it was, of course, this big leftist protest, and I went there to go find out what they were doing. And I had him sort of be, you know, on the field or man on the street correspondent and come in and report to us, and he did that. And he really, really felt like kind of comfortable doing it. You know, some people, everyone thinks radio is easy, and I'm fine.
It's not easy.
And so he jumps right in, he starts doing that, and he's really starting to sort of get his feel for it. And I remember walking out of the studio when we had first been on the air, and he said, how did you think I did? I said, no, you did great. You know, I asked you the questions, you answered them, you had, you know, something to say. It wasn't you were doing a whole lot of and I don't know. You know, you had answers for me, so, and that's really, really good. So then, of course, he asked the famous question, do you think I could do this for a living? It's a perfect time for you to start now. You're only 16 years old, you know, and, you know, there are a lot of people out there who say you should go to broadcasting school and all that other stuff. Look, your father never did all that stuff. You know, I got in literally from the ground floor, worked my way up. You go out there and do that. So I get this instant message from his mother who says he's going out for this job at a hip-hop station in Charlotte, North Carolina. And 2 days later, he got the job, and he's got a gig. He's going to be doing weekdays I think the station number is 105.3.
That's what you said, 103.
I thought it was 2. Let me clear this up. The station is 105.3. It is currently an all-Spanish station. And I listened to them today online, and there was a lot of Cuchi Frito stuff going on this station. I didn't understand what they were singing or what they were talking about. There was a whole lot of guitars playing. There's a horn section in every record. I don't know, so I couldn't really get into it. But there was a report that was released a couple of days ago that the company Radio One has just purchased this station to compete with two other hip-hop stations there. So he's really, really starting at the ground floor. And it'll be Wednesdays at 8 o'clock during this show. So his first broadcast, what I'm going to do, I'm probably going to jip it and jump in. I'm going to put his show online and when he's on the air, because on the hip-hop stations, they don't do a lot of talking. A lot of their stuff is just introducing records and probably talking about some of the, I guess, the station ID stuff. You know, hey, we got a contest, or hey, we're doing this. But it'd be a great opportunity to hear him. So it's Wednesday, 8 p.m. It starts in September. I will fill everybody in on what it is. If you are interested in at least hearing what he sounds like, I'm excited to hear what he sounds like. I'm just more concerned about the radio business and how tough it is. And especially now that there are two established hip-hop stations that are already there and he's going to be the new one coming in, it's a really, really tough road to bear unless you're really, really good. I say that because in New York City, Hot 97 was the marquee station for hip-hop in New York. Power 105 came in, and people said they weren't going to be able to compete. Well, here it is. It's been almost 10 years, and now the overall number one station in New York for hip-hop and R&B is Power 105. So they've actually beat Hot 97 in the numbers. It took some time, but they did. So, you know, I wish them luck. JC, you saw the report that came out about Radio 1 buying this station. If he's still there. I think he's not there. No, he's... There he is. Let me just pull him in. Oh, okay. There you go. So, did you get the breakdown of all of this? I mean, the other two stations are pretty established. This station, did it give an exact launch date of this hip-hop station?
No. I'm pretty sure the article said that it's going to be at some point soon. It didn't give an exact date. They didn't really mention the turnover date. But I think we had a conversation earlier about the Charlotte market. That, remember, I've been telling you I've been wanting to move to Charlotte for a long time, simply because the radio market, it sucks down there.
Is it really that bad?
Yeah, it's pretty bad down there. The station that you initially gave, 103.3, I'm so glad he's not there.
Yes, I thought it was that, but then I instant messaged my ex-wife again, and she told me that the proper station, but she said she didn't know exactly which station it was, and then I did some digging, and I found it.
Right, right. Because that station that you initially gave, WGIV, which is out of Charlotte, that's like Chitlin Radio 101.
Yeah, that's an R&B, like an 80s and 90s R&B station, right?
Yeah, heavily associated with church, so that means that he would have been completely surrounded by gimme, let me have liberals.
Yeah, I'm not.
That would have been too good. But no, I mean, when you brought him up to Boston, if you remember, I was pretty much around for that whole time. I thought he did pretty good, especially for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought he had the chops for it. He likes to talk. You know, he is his father's son.
Yeah. And it's ironic because that's the exact age that I got my first radio show.
That's right, JC. You did start at 16. I know that.
I started out at 16. And I think my very first experience on the radio, I think he had a better deal than I did when I went in with the DJ my first night of training. He basically stuck me on the air with PSAs with no training whatsoever. And
so
within two weeks,
you were doing public service announcements?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, in fact, the very first one that I did was for the Most Beautiful Eyes in Connecticut contest, which was sponsored by the Connecticut Lung Association.
Hmm.
I'll never forget it because I damn near crapped my pants while I was reading it. So I didn't expect it at all. But you are right in not going to, like, broadcast school. A lot of people, they try to suck you in with the whole broadcast deal. And they want you to sit there and pay basically $20,000 to $30,000 to sit in a booth and talk to yourself.
And you get to a radio station and they completely revamp you to do something else. It never ever works. Everyone I've seen in the business that comes from broadcasting school do the old basic. They can't do anything new. They're locked in a silly ideology, and they're not risk takers. They're just not. They're not willing to go the extra mile do something new. They stick with the same stupid benchmarks. You know, it's absolutely uncanny, but, you know, what are you going
to
do?
Listen, he's got a good deal, because the best way to go is, especially on terrestrial radio, is without a net. Because if you make a mistake, you just recover and you move on. You know what I mean? In a couple weeks, a couple weeks ago, I went and judged the open mic competition here in Connecticut. And I was judging along with the program director from one of my old stations, and he basically offered me a position to come back. And I'm just waiting on the right night to go. I think I'm going to go on a 10 until 2 in the morning, to that night until 2 in the morning, and I'm hoping for a weekend slot. I don't want to do it 5 days a week.
Weekend slots are pretty good. I actually happen to like weekend spots, but you know me, I'm an evening drive kind of guy. But I just wanted to bring
that's a good slot for getting people ready for the clubs. But
absolutely,
where he's going in Charlotte, I believe that everybody's gonna initially he's gonna have all eyes on him, because the Charlotte radio scene, like I said, it's terrible. And I've been eyeing it for a long time.
I wish him luck. I'm pretty sure he's going to
do a good job.
I think he'll do well. Anyway, so moving on, I have to bring up this story. Did you see this story, Mary? I figured you would like this story.
I haven't had a chance to look at any of the... Oh, I did see this story. Okay, I was about to say I hadn't had a chance to look at this story at any news, and then I saw it was LL Cool J.
Yes. Okay, look, I'm not impressed by this story, okay? I understand it involves a celebrity subduing an intruder, okay? But then I started to hear the story. Okay, first you hear LL Cool J confronts an intruder in his home in California. And then I read the story and I say, okay, LL's 44 years old. He's fit, okay? They tell me that the intruder is 50 years old. So I'm going, okay, all right, he's 50 years old. That's not that old. I know a lot of guys who are 50 who are still fit. Okay, then I hear another story that the guy is 58 years old and he's homeless.
Oh,
and then
he's
58, he's homeless, and he's white. Now, this isn't nothing.
I didn't see all that.
I'm not suggesting anything. The fact that he's white makes any difference. But it's a 58-year-old homeless guy running through his kitchen, which clearly he was going in to get food. We hear that LL Cool J, according to the report, LL Cool J busted his nose and bloodied his lip and then held him down for police. He was then taken to the hospital and released. Now, it would normally inspire people to scream the old adage from his album, Mama Said Knock You Out. Ha, 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 ha. But a 58-year-old homeless guy?
Okay, listen. Let me interject here. Okay. You're in your home, or you walk into your home, and you see some random dude.
Yeah.
Homeless or not, black or white, Latino or not, Asian. You what? See some stranger running through your shit. Knock that brother Joker out. You don't know if he...
He could have grabbed the knife.
He could have grabbed the knife. Absolutely. He could have done anything. He could have been anything. So, of course. So what? I don't care if you're 58. 68, 28, it doesn't matter.
Listen, it's about damn time he used those muscles for something other than selling records.
Okay, fair enough.
Listen, let me tell you a story about LL Cool J.
Oh, I'm dying to hear this.
LL Cool J used to come to the Coliseum on Jamaica Avenue in Queens, okay, in New York. LL was like you know, everybody knows everybody, you know, he was from the neighborhood, well, from around the area. He knew people. Would come out and didn't ever bring any security with him.
Right.
How many times did he come to the Coliseum and got stuck up?
Yes. This is, and this is another amazing story, because that's, again, this goes right into why I'm bringing this up. LL Cool J was known for getting robbed often early in his career in Queens.
Very early. Snatched.
LL Cool J would get his chain snatched or he'd get beat up often. This guy had multi-million dollar record sales. And he was getting beat up in the old neighborhood.
And why was he getting beat up in the old neighborhood? Because he thought he was too cool for school.
Well, guys were...
And listen. He was coming out with no security guards, nothing. He was just coming out like, oh, you know, what's up, homeboy? We chilling, you know, remember back in the day?
Look, again...
He's going back to his mansion and you still sit in the
he
hood?
He didn't live in a mansion.
Or going back to
he
wherever...
He lived in a co-op off of Hillside Avenue.
No. This was... Hadn't he already made money?
And yes! Yes, Walking with a Panther was out. He was still living in Jamaica.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought he had moved.
Anyway, not much of a story. But, of course, everyone's got it. And this is the reason why I bring this up. I'm sorry. I know this is a lame-o story. But there's a reason why I'm bringing it up. Why is this story on Breitbart?
Because it was a homeowner defending himself against an intruder. Into the right-wing mindset.
Defending himself against an intruder. Also, but there's another added part to this that people don't know. LL Cool J is a conservative.
Oh, I
mean, he's rich.
What's that?
He's rich. He's rich. He's conservative. Conservative.
That's right. LL Cool J is a conservative. In fact, it's a little known fact about him, because if you notice about LL Cool J, he rarely brings up politics.
I didn't know that.
Rarely brings up politics. I found this out. You know, sometimes Yahoo does this thing about, you know, like famous left-handed people or, you know, like famous Mormons. One time Yahoo News does this thing. It's a little picture photo array of famous conservatives. And they had like 50 people on the list. So I'm saying, okay, let me see if there's anybody on here who I know.
And 50 Cent was on the list.
And 50 Cent was on the list, and so was LL Cool J. But don't get the 50 Cent thing is a lie. I don't believe that 100%. Just because he called George W. Bush gangster does not make you a conservative. that's what they quoted him as.
He lived in a very conservative town in Connecticut.
What would have happened had that guy broken into Hank Williams Jr.'s house?
Oh, they'd been shot. But you know what they would have said about Hank Williams Jr., right?
After that,
yeah, good shot.
No. The press would have said Hank Williams Jr. thought he'd look like Obama.
Hey, I give it up to Hank, man, because Hank has taken off all pretenses. He said Obama was a Muslim who hated farmers and hated America.
And what are you going to do to him? He's no longer singing every... Are you ready for some football?
Yeah. What's Hank going to do? Cry on his big pile of money?
Right, exactly. Edward's in the house with us. How are you, Edward?
Hey, I'm good. Hey, you know, it's funny. In the past couple of weeks, we've had Rick Ross, Ice-T come out for the Second Amendment. Now we hear LL Cool J, the conservative... Someone needs to start a Rappers for Romney camp or something.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely. Why not? You know, the only conservative rapper I've actually heard make songs about conservatism is, why am I forgetting his name now? I wanted to say it's not Status Quo. Why did I think his name was Status Quo? He used to be, do you guys, anybody here ever listen to, why am I forgetting her name now? No, she's the blonde talk show host who's always on Hannity. She's always on Bill O'Reilly. She has that new book called What the Bleep Just Happened. Her name is escaping me.
I know who you're talking about. My name.
Is it Chelsea Handler?
No. She's a conservative.
Chelsea Handler doesn't come on Hannity.
She's a conservative talk show host, blonde hair. Monica Crowley. Have you guys ever listened to her show?
No.
Nope.
Not.
Okay, I can't reference anybody who knows. So she used to have a rapper that would come on every week, and he would do a conservative rap record. He would produce it himself. And he actually got featured in a hip-hop magazine, but once they found out he was a conservative, you know, no one wanted to talk to him again. Which, in and of itself, scares the hell out of me. That one, Monica Crowley had a rapper on her show, and two, it was a conservative one.
The new stat came out that 0% of African Americans are going to vote for Mitt Romney or something like that.
I saw that that poll, and it's not exactly fair because they oversampled Democrats in that in the poll methodology. If you take a look at it,
yeah. I mean, what did they do? They just walked through Harlem.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Come on. I mean, I could walk through Brooklyn and get that poll.
They didn't do it that bad, but they oversampled Democrats by, I think, maybe about 10% or more.
Yeah, I just don't know how they poll people anymore because, you know, polling was always done over the telephone. But
right.
How many people really have landlines anymore? I don't.
We don't have one.
Yeah,
nothing but a spell.
An interesting thing, you know, my former boss, he said he used to do polling back in the 80s. And he said what he always noticed about those pollings, he said the one thing he didn't like about them was, he said the people they always polled were old people. They always polled people in their, you know, like older people in their homes, anywhere between 55 and 70. And I find that interesting because I don't know if they're doing the polling now, and they're polling people on their landline phones. The only people I know who have landline phones are the elderly.
Yeah.
And most of those don't even have landline phones anymore.
I mean, the government doesn't give out free landlines. I know they give out those Obama cell phones, but you can't get a free landline phone. So where are all these Democrats with landlines?
Well, I would say that if I were to look at the elderly, okay, I want to take my mom's generation, okay? My mom's 63 years old. She's from the flower power, early 70s generation. I mean, for Christ's sakes, I'm born the day before Woodstock, August 14th. Woodstock's the next day after I'm born. My mom is of that whole era. So senior citizens are in my mother's sort of, you know, that particular era, okay, in and around her age. That's the era we're talking about. If it's the hippie generation, for crying out loud, those people are more than likely liberal.
You would think, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, my mom has always voted Republican. I mean, it was that Dixiecrat thing back in the old days, but my mom's been a Republican since, God, Reagan? Yeah, since Reagan, at least.
Since Reagan?
Since Reagan. Yeah, my mom is 65.
And your mom is not a liberal?
Well,
oh,
no.
Where did she grow up?
South Louisiana.
Well, that's why.
Yeah, that would explain. But, you know, Louisiana was always Democrat up until...
Louisiana was?
Yeah, up until, God, Dave Treen or somebody was the governor. We always had Democratic governors.
Right. We're talking like, you know, pre-60, pre-64. That was, you know, heavily Democrat.
It all kind of changed after integration, I think.
Right.
That was the nail in the coffin.
But I look at all the people that I see who are around my mom's age. I have a lot of older friends. All of them are, you know, they just appear to be liberal. Not that they were really a part of the hippie generation, but they were just part of that whole, you know, that forced change, if you will. Sort of like anti-war, you know, pro-entitlement sort of ideology, peace-loving. Just most of the people I know around that age were. So, I mean, if they're polling all these people, I would assume most of them were Democrat no matter what, which is why the polling would be skewed in that way.
Well, and it depends on which part of the country you poll, too. I mean, I'm sure that Northeastern elderly people and California elderly people are far more liberal than Deep South elderly people.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there. Well, thank you, gentlemen, as always, Dennis, Mike, and Edward. I always appreciate you guys joining in the conversation. I hope there's more news tomorrow. We tried to spread it out and talk about as much as we possibly could. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Okay, don't just leave.
So we will see you guys tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. It's Reese on the Radio. We love you. See you tomorrow.